MSW Media.
Spy Talk, a podcast at the intersection of intelligence, foreign policy, national security, and military operations.
Hi there, I'm Jeff Stein.
I'm Michael Isikoff.
And I'm Karen Greenberg.
Welcome to another edition of the Spy Talk podcast. Have we gotten, are we there yet? Have we reached bottom yet? This week, we not only have a housing guy running the National Intelligence Agency, we now learn that he's hired as his chief of staff or brought over from the housing agency an elections official, a GOP elections official. In other words, the head, the DNI, has no intelligence experience. His qualification is that he's a hitman for the president. He's investigated the mortgages of Trump's perceived enemies. And now he's got an elections monitor from the GOP.
I think political operative is the word that best applies to the new chief of staff at the Office of Director of National Intelligence. And this is a woman named Christina Norton. Who has never served in any national security or intelligence role in the U.S. government, has had no access, as far as anybody could tell, to any classified information or a security clearance, at least in her past. And, you know, one of the things we discovered looking into this is that she had been the director of something called the Republican National Committee Election Integrity Project. She ran this and boasted about it in her Instagram accounts, which she took down after she got this job and made progress. But she boasted she was running the largest election integrity operation in history and deploying Republican poll watchers to stand guard
at 200,000 of them.
200,000 poll watchers standing guard at polling stations and vote counting stations across the country.
Think she was exaggerating? That's like a lot of poll. 200,000.
Well, I mean, it was a big operation. They filed over 100 lawsuits, 140 lawsuits, I think she said. But the point is, what does this have to do with national, the ODNI, the Office of National Intelligence, which is supposed to coordinate sensitive classified intelligence from 17 intelligence agencies across the government?
Nothing.
Absolutely nothing, except to the extent that there is, you know, growing concerns and evidence that the Trump administration plans to somehow use ODNI to cast a cloud over the upcoming midterms. Why else would Tulsi Gabbard have flown down to Fulton County, Georgia for an FBI search of 2020 election ballots in that state? Why would she have tried to get access to the voting machines in Puerto Rico? I mean, this has been a consistent narrative, or a consistent theme from ODNI that began with Gabbard, but has now clearly continued with Pulte and his new chief of staff, who is nothing but a partisan political election operative.
Another instance of saying the quiet part out loud.
Yeah, but also another instance of just the dangers of having coordinated 18 intelligence agencies with one supervisory umbrella. And while it means one thing to connect the dots for national security, what does it mean in terms of being able to take different capacities, different legal authorities, et cetera, for when it comes to elections? And I actually think this is an extremely worrisome moment, and not just for this coming election, but for the presidential election in 28.
Absolutely, Karen. Why else would you appoint people with no intelligence experience, national security experience whatsoever?
Because it's not about intelligence.
It's not
about intelligence. It's about being able to deploy the policies, to pick a nice word, that they want to enact.
But it gets worse. The New York Times has written a story, published a story, about how the DNI is demanding the names of all the CIA's spies abroad, foreign agents working for it, as well as the FBI's, and the targets of FBI investigations. Why would the DNI want that? I can only think of the worst of their motivations.
Well, you're right. And who's going to review it? How are you going to define what information flows from various, from the FBI, from the CIA to ODNI? Especially, all right, look, given ODNI is now run by a political operative, right? A MAGA political operative, somebody with no intelligence experience. And that's Pulte. His chief of staff is Norton. So what are the categories of information that ODNI is going to scoop up as part of this? I mean, the names of spies, the names of suspected spies, the names of informants, the names of potential targets of corruption investigations, which is, I think, in the mix there.
Yep.
So is this like dismantling themselves? I mean, this is a kind of, you do this act and you run the risk of just destroying the institutions that you're involving.
Well, they're already dismantling themselves, because the first thing Pulte did when he moved in there last week was to hollow out the ranks of the National Intelligence Council.
And including people that you reported.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who were the subject matter experts on what? Ukraine, Russia.
The senior national intelligence officers for Russia, Ukraine, China, East Asia, Europe, and weapons of mass destruction were all cashiered by Pulte the day after he arrived.
Give me a reason for that. Give me an explanation for that. Nefarious or positive, whatever. Give me an explanation.
Well, the benign explanation is that ODNI has grown bloated and become redundant, and it's a bureaucratic mess that's overseeing and gets in the way of the intelligence agencies. That's a critique that many have shared, by the way, not just on the right and the left. Yeah. I mean, certainly Tom Cotton, who on the right, chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee, has been pushing for reducing ODNI, and people who have served there have said the same thing. But as somebody who has worked there and said to me, I mean, this was done just like with a sledgehammer, and to target people who were the recognized experts on key world hotspots seems a little crazy.
Well, my understanding is that those people that you mentioned were sent back to their agencies.
Yes, that's right.
So they're not exactly
fired. Yes, a lawyer called me up afterwards and said, you know, do you think any of these people want to file a lawsuit? But in fact, they're getting sent back to their home agencies, so they're not losing pay and they're not getting their security clearance stripped. So they don't really have a cause of action to say they were, you know, harmed by this. It's the country that was arguably harmed by this, not so much the individuals.
Yeah, I'm really alarmed by this latest stuff of demanding the names of CIA assets, spies. This violates a basic cardinal rule of intelligence. You share on a need to know only. That's why there are various levels of security clearances. Top secret is just the beginning. You know, you have special access programs above that for various projects and programs. And I can say from my very brief, brilliant career in intelligence many decades ago, that even asking about what somebody else is doing sort of raises eyebrows. I mean, you just don't do that. This is... Anybody who's read John le Carré knows that, you know, you're supposed to keep secrets about the program you're working on, especially if it involves penetrating, say, the Russian government, the Chinese government, and so on. So why the DNI would want, I only have the darkest interpretation of why the DNI, who is a Trump apparatchik, why they would want these names. Nobody has any business demanding these names. The story did say that the counterintelligence chiefs at the FBI and CIA are fighting back. And I suppose that's why the story appeared.
Yeah.
That's often the way it works.
Is Jay Clayton off the table? I mean, what's happening?
He seems to be. Let just follow the bouncing ball here. Trump announces, and this gets to the how election interference is so intertwined with everything that's going on here. Trump announces Jay Clayton, the U.S. attorney in Manhattan, will be his nominee to replace Tulsi Gabbard as DNI. Then no sooner does he announce that, and the Senate rushes to schedule a confirmation hearing because they want to get him confirmed because he's at least a serious person with a serious
credentials.
Job.
Yeah.
You know, it's not the best credentials to be the top prosecutor in New York, but they do terrorism and espionage cases.
He actually doesn't have the credentials.
Oh, sorry.
Well, he has some of the credentials.
Well, you're supposed to have deep experience in national security and intelligence.
He's been
a prosecutor.
I withdraw my credentials.
By current standards, he was seen as a clear improvement and definitely preferred over Bill Pulte, who's a political hatchet man.
And Trump drew up the drawbridge behind him. He left that job and Trump appointed somebody else.
Yeah, no sooner does the Senate schedule the confirmation hearing for Jay Clayton that Trump pulls it back and tells Flake to not go.
Yeah.
And because he wants Pulte in there right away. And Pulte goes in there right away and starts wielding the hatchet and firing people.
Also off the table, Karen, your favorite subject, Section 702 of the Surveillance Act, which its supporters say is absolutely critical to stopping foreign plots.
Yeah.
What's going to happen to that?
Well, what's most amazing about it is that we as a country seem to have lost interest in what's going to happen with it. And who knows what's going to happen with it? You know, there are, as we discussed in the past, there is this theory that a number of lawyers and others have that because the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court approves the general ways in which you can collect this information and search this information, that therefore they've done it for the next year, and so that there is some kind of protocol and policy in place. But we don't really know that. We haven't tested it this way before. And so we're in limbo in this.
So we think it's continuing under some other authorities. Is that it?
Yes, but it's not other authorities. It's just sort of one of the areas that you weigh in on the policy is one thing, but this is taking Congress out of it. And so the question is really, when are we going to get back to what needs to be done, which is to vote on this one way or the other?
Well, I suppose this is one of those issues that Trump finds boring, like the housing bill that was received overwhelmingly bipartisan support. That's boring to him. He wants the Save America Act to pass first.
I think it's that the momentum for requiring a warrant to search the information that they've collected when it has to do with U.S. persons got too much momentum, and it got too many people on its side for the first time since, you know, its earliest passage. And so now I think they couldn't make their way through it. They couldn't figure it out. And both the left and the right were challenging it on those grounds. And so they just found a way to just say, we can't deal with this.
Before we get to our guest, I just had one other item I wanted to flag. And this is under the category of as it gets crazier at the top of our government, it's getting even crazier in our culture. And so here's an item that caught my attention in the paper today. Dutch authorities on Tuesday said they are increasingly concerned by so-called nihilistic extremism driven by online subcultures that glorify violence for attention and status rather than ideology. The Dutch National Coordinator for Counterterrorism and Security said such extremism is motivated by a destructive and anti-human worldview, with violence seen both as a goal in and of itself and means to gaining recognition. And so just a few hours after I see the item about what the Dutch are saying, the U.S. Attorney's Office in Albany announces that they've arrested a guy affiliated with 764, which is the sort of nihilistic, violent, extremist group that they are most worried about. This is a guy who was charged with receiving child sex abuse images, but also plotted after he learned the FBI was going after him, to actually murder the FBI agents and the U.S. assistant U.S. attorney who was handling his case, kill them and put them through a wood chipper. And this is the kind of group that's out there and raising concerns.
It's hard to keep up with all the craziness. Well,
so, yeah.
Anyway. So you got brought on a guest today, Mike. You encouraged this guy to come on, Tom Lobianco, and he's got quite a story to tell. Tell us a little bit about him.
Yes. Worked with Tom at Yahoo News. He's a veteran political reporter from Indiana. Wrote a biography of Mike Pence that came out after Pence became Trump's first vice president. And he has quite an experience to relate about how he found himself in the middle of a Chinese intelligence operation.
Hmm.
So let's bring Tom on to hear about it.
Tom Lobianco, welcome to Spy Talk. I must say, in going over your story this morning, I thought that old saying from the 60s came up. What a strange long journey this has been. And you found yourself in the middle, you're a reporter, but you found yourself in the middle of a Chinese espionage case. Give us the highlights.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, guys, for having me on. Yeah, this Oh, God. You know, sometimes when I talk with the normies around here, civilians, neighbors, friends, other parents, I just like I take a deep breath. I'm like, I would love for life to be normal, like whatever that is.
You'd be bored so fast.
That's right. I know. Good.
Anyway, what happened?
So here's what happened. This is back in the middle of the 2024 race for the White House. So, you know, I started 24-site news. Oh, January 2024, and we were on Substack, and you know I was at the Messenger before, and this is my third White House race. You know, people know I'm in perpetuity covering Mike Pence, still covering Mike Pence. Got a third book just come out recently, so I'll be covering Mike Pence for the rest of my life. And you know, all things Trump and whatnot. And you know, one of the interesting things about being in this independent space now, I mean, we're all, you know, we all been doing it for a minute, but you don't have the basic guardrails that we used to have in place. You know, whether it's like we were at Yahoo News, we're at the Washington Post, you know, CNN, wherever, and we're the ones fielding all the incoming now requests to come on a podcast, for instance. You know, like, hey, Spy Talk. Well, I know Isikoff. All right. Isikoff reaches out. And I'm like, well, he's not, that guy's not a spy. All right. Awesome.
We think not.
There we go. All right.
But
that's
knows?
An easy yes.
Far too erratic to be a spy. Undependable. All right. So take us, what happened?
So here's what happened. So, you know, I got a request from this person on X.com. And they're like, you know, we want to have you do consulting. You know, would you do that? And my standard screen is, you know, send me an email with details. So send me an email. So they actually sent me this email, and I'll pull it up because let me see what we got here. Send it on back in July, and it says, hello. Oh, this is funny. My name inside the federal affidavit. So this was all just revealed publicly for the first time a couple weeks ago. The DOJ took down this.
Let's
ring
not get ahead of ourselves here, Tom. So you got this inquiry asking you to do some consulting work. What happened next?
Yeah, it says I am a BD manager from Right Info Consulting Singapore website, rightinfoconsult.com. We are looking for experts in U.S. politics and foreign policy. Considering your experience and knowledge, would you like to be our senior analyst? This is a part-time position and will not affect your current job. If you're interested, I'd like to discuss the roles, responsibilities, and compensation with you further. Well, that's actually the X.com message. Well, then they send me the follow-up email, and there's a couple, kind of two big flags that jump out immediately. Well, number one, in the email, they say that we're going to pay you between $1,500 and $2,500 per piece.
Okay.
Which, as we know, is, I mean, that's nice. Pretty good money, you know, unless you're like writing
these
for New York Times.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. I mean, that used to be like standard, maybe like 10, 15 years ago, but now it's the other thing is when they also say, we're going to tell you what the topic is, which is really weird. The language was weird. I'm used to getting all kinds of weird stuff, you know, but like, this is like extra weird.
Well, what did they say to you? What was the next interchange?
Well, then the other thing is that I looked at the website. And so I go to the website, and it's just like it's like one of these like stock, it's like stock photos of people smiling in business suits, looking
shiny,
at stuff.
Happy people.
Yeah, and I'm like, well, okay, I don't even know what the hell this thing is. Like, I can't tell just by looking at it until I get to the bottom. Scroll all the way down to the bottom, and the bottom of this page, it's taken down now, but you can find it in the Internet Archive. Down at the bottom, it's got these really weird latest posts. And their news articles, what I presume is what they would be looking for me to write for them. And the one back then, I can't find it anymore, but I just remember distinctly the one that really stuck out to me was, it was a story about feminist Nazis being the ones really responsible for a bombing in Moscow.
They're the worst.
When it comes to bombings in Moscow, I think we all know, right?
The feminazis, yeah.
Yes. Feminist Nazis.
Then what happens?
So, I mean, you know, I've had, at the beginning of 2024, I had somebody from CGTN. I'd never even heard of these guys before. CGTN calls me up while I'm on the road in New Hampshire in like January of 2024. And they're like, oh, can we get you on? And I was like, yeah, sure, whatever. All right. I'm driving between campaign stops covering the presidential. And I finally stopped to look them up. I'm like, what the hell is CGT? I never even heard of these guys. Chinese Global Television Network.
Right.
And I was like, no, I'm not. No, I don't do state. My God, dear God. All right. So that was like, you know, standard crazy. All right, for that. This one was like, what the hell's going on here? So I actually called up an old Intel source from doing all the Trump Russia coverage about a decade ago. And I was like, you know, what do I do with this? And my source was like, you know what? Why don't you turn it in? Why don't you send it into the feds, the FBI? I was like, yeah, okay, yeah. So I called up the FBI press office. And I was like, you know, I'm not actually calling for information. I think I have something for you. And they're like, well, you know, put it in the tips, tips.fbi.gov. And I did. And about two months later, was it July? So whatever, September something, the 2024, they call me in. I go down to the Washington field office and I sit down for an interview. And they, you know, it seems like this is an actual thing. Like, this is, legit.
What did they tell you when you say this was an actual thing? How did they define what this thing is and what this message you got was?
Well, that seemed like a recruiting effort by some kind of foreign intelligence.
They didn't tell you which foreign government intelligence service was behind this. They just told you it was a foreign government intelligence service.
Could be. It was not definitive at that point. And, you know, as we see later in the actual affidavit that's filed eventually on this thing, apparently I was pretty at the early end of this thing. All right. I was on the front end of this investigation back in the summer of 2024, because they start talking with other people through like 2025. They sit me down. They're like, can we take photos of your interactions? So we bring in the cell phone. They got to get clearance to do, you know, can we bring a cell phone into the secure space? Typically, you have to, this is my first time down at the field office. Like, you have to park your phone and, you know, in the boxes out front, they screen you. They bring you back in there. And it's two agents. I'm pretty sure this is terrible. This is a cough as As my journalist elder, I know you will kill me for this. I did not take copious notes afterwards after that. I walked out of there. I just
stayed number pretty, one.
I know.
Always take notes.
I feel like
take them.
Yes, right? Man. Well, I'm pretty sure it was the Daniel Wurzbisky, who's the lead agent on this one. And then the woman's name, I'm forgetting right now. There's two folks.
Well, we don't need the names.
Yeah, there's two folks who specialize in this. And they're asking me, well, you know, can we take photos of your phone? Can we take photos of your exchanges? I was like, yeah, go for it. You know, sent them a thing. It was interesting, too. And this is kind of one of these things where it's like, you know, there were definitely moments where I was like thinking to myself, I'm like, gee, I'm just walking into this thing. I wonder if I should have brought a lawyer with me or something. Oh, that did occur to me at some point, but I'm like, whatever. Like, I mean, I'm not, you know, I'm bringing it to these guys. You know, I'm not worried about it. So, but then they asked me questions. They're like, you know, it's at some point toward the end of it, they're like, you know, if you know, it's always better to say something early than it is to say something later. And I was like, oh. And they're like, yeah, you know, like if you take any money or something like that. And I was like, okay.
Did they ask you questions that made you think you had stepped into something larger than what you had thought you had stepped into? I mean, did their questions tip you off to anything or?
Well, you know, I mean, we this coffin, I covered Trump Russia, you know, some might even say what it continues to be Trump Russia, I would argue. But I kind of had a sense of it, you know, from the outset, because so much of what, you know, we're seeing now is these pop-up online campaigns. You know, the Mueller indictment, when it came out, was, you know, very insightful for the actual physical infrastructure that was put into place here domestically that was used to actually prop this stuff up. So it certainly didn't seem to hit that level. But I had a pretty good sense, like, I don't want to say this thing was ham-handed, but they didn't do a very good job of, like, covering up that it was something.
Let me ask you this, Tom. I wrote a story for Newsweek, got to be 10 years ago, maybe, about how Russia was using LinkedIn to do these kinds of recruitments. And also the FBI has on its own website the case of the guy who I think was in Hong Kong or Guangzhou, and he got an offer to do just like you were involved in a consulting offer.
I think
offer.
It was Singapore in the affidavit.
Was it Singapore? Yeah.
Identify a guy from Singapore.
I mean, the guy on the FBI site, I think he was in Hong Kong or wherever he was. Anyway, almost exactly parallel to your experience. But he got in too deep and they had blackmailable material because he had cooperated and they were then asking him to join the CIA. So anyway, so my question is, were you aware of these kinds of shadowy transactions, offers?
Yeah. Yes. I mean, generally, you know,
was that propelled you to go to the FBI because it sounded familiar?
Okay. Well, this is, you know, not specifically, but I mean, generally speaking, I mean, you know, given what we cover, my guard's always up, you know, and you're always kind of listening. You know, as reporters would be doing this, whether we'd be, you know, whether we're covering the Frederick County Council, you know, from Frederick, Maryland, or, you know, we're covering this stuff, you know, covering the White House, you know, your guard's always up and you always have your antenna up and you're kind of listening for, well, who am I really talking to? All right, like when I'm talking to whoever's source, or if we're out of drinks, you know, I mean, my God, these embassy parties are, you never know who you're talking to. All right, you do usually if you've been around for a minute, but like, you know, you always have a sense of this stuff, right? You want to have a sense of this stuff. And this one, just to me at the outset, I was like, this is some kind of foreign op. I don't know which one it is, but it's definitely not one of ours. Okay.
But that was where you were 2 years ago. Now, just last month, this blows up. The FBI announced that it has seized more than a dozen websites that were part of a Chinese effort to target American workers and get them to provide sensitive, if not classified, information. And this came just a few days after the Five Eyes Intelligence Sharing Alliance, that's Australia, Canada, New Zealand, the UK, and the US, issues a bulletin warning that China is targeting personnel from these countries on job websites like LinkedIn to get access to classified or sensitive information. So here's my question for starting. You're a political reporter. You're not primarily national security or intelligence. You've never served, as far as I know, in the government and had access to classified information. Why would they be reaching out to you if their goal is to get classified information that would give them an edge in their competition with the U.S.?
You know, that's a great question. I wondered about that. It is a great question. I mean, you know, in some sense, I guess it's high praise, you know, that they figure out that whatever I'm reporting on, whoever I'm talking to is like, you know, worth trying to, you know, run an include an intelligence operation. I don't know entirely. I mean, you know, given what I cover, I was covering more of it back then, but, you know, inside Trump world, inside Pence world, the Republican primaries, the presidential, you know, I always kind of assume, you know, especially if I'm going out in Washington and I'm going to go meet with anybody, whoever it is, new source, old source, they bring some friends, we're out of cocktails or whatever. I just assume that the ears are everything. Everyone's always listening. All right. So whatever I'm going to talk about, all right, you know, I'm always, you know, it's not like, I don't think everybody is a Russian or a Chinese spy, but I'm always kind of like, all right, you never know, right? You never know where this information is going to go. I don't know, but I don't know why they would pick me of any journalist.
I don't think they really did in a way. Their MO is to cast a wide net electronically. It could have been generated by AI, and they just put out millions of these things on LinkedIn and, you know, job sites all over the world. And they just wait for a fish to swim in. And so a certain percentage of people are going to answer.
Yeah. And we should say that in the FBI affidavit that justified this action where they seized and took down these internet domains, they did include other sources of information who did have access to classified information. So that goes under the category of the wide net and, you know, from you, perhaps political intelligence or just some sort of legitimacy with a mainstream political reporter that somehow they could use. But there were a lot of fascinating details in that affidavit, including how a lot of these companies, which have names like, you know, Centric, Right Yes. Info Consulting was the one that reached out to you. There's something else called Centric Global Consulting, which, according to the affidavit, when the FBI tries to track down where they came from, who are these people, they say that this one Centric Global, which is one of the principal ones, they trace it back to an office building in London that has a company called Company Formation LTD, which is a complete shell. You have no idea who that it's a company set up to set up shell companies, right? And so at this stage, do we know who these people are other than presumably Chinese intelligence operatives?
Yeah, it seems to be Chinese intelligence that they're, you know, they had some pseudonyms that they used. They also used fake identities, stolen identities. Like if you trace one of them, it goes back to it's a lady down in Destin, Florida, and who's got a nice house. You know, I looked it up on Zillow, and
she's not a Chinese spy. She's
not
just
a Chinese
innocent
spy.
Bystander.
Whose
personal information they took and used to set up these phony companies.
Yeah. And you can see, you know, it's fascinating. You dig through that affidavit. you can see the legwork that they did doing what we do here, right? Is report the story. All right. So that one of the agents flew down there, whoever went down there and interviewed this lady, and they come back and they're like, yeah, she looks like a victim here. So she's probably not the front for this thing.
Right. But then, but just getting to my question, yeah. I mean, nobody's been arrested. Nobody's in custody as a result of this.
No.
Presumably they're somewhere overseas. But the question is, does the FBI know the real identities of these people who set up these phony companies?
You know, I don't know that exactly, but based on some redactions, I think they do.
I mean, there's some names redacted, but you don't know if they're real names or just the phony names.
They certainly would have investigated it.
Yeah.
These leads, you know, they would have tracked these leads.
Yeah.
Of course, in a hierarchy of priorities, this is probably not a high priority, but
it's an ongoing
interest of the FBI.
But it also, it's about how wide a net was cast. You know, yeah. I mean, how much were they, once, you know, it could get too wide. So you don't know who's doing what and how to follow it. And it becomes rather a confusing mess. And the affidavit does not make you think that they were able to sift through everything and sort of, right? I mean, it's got a kind of vagueness and breadth to it, no?
There was, you know what, I remember this now. I had to pull it up. This is, I read this last week after Iskoff and I talked. I finally sat down with through the entire document. They refer to somebody as, it was like subject A. So like the targets are, right, the websites are target domain one, target domain two. The recruiting subjects are recruit A, B, C, da, 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 da. It's like all the way down to like I think I or J or something. But there is a subject who they refer to. I'm pretty sure it's a subject A, who sounds like that is the person, or at least the one that they were able to find. And I don't recall if they
you mean one of the perps, one of the perpetrators of these ads? I want to get back to that, but we have to step away for just a second. Okay, we're back. Tom, so what next?
Well, you know what's funny about this is, as I was going through this, and I talked to a couple other folks, you know, just in general about this, because best I can tell, this is the only time anyone's tried to recruit me as a foreign intelligence asset. I would be very happy if it's the last. Wouldn't mind that.
Did the FBI ask you to play along for them to turn you into one of their agents?
No, they didn't.
Funny.
Yeah. You know, what they did say on the way out, and there are kind of two things they said, which, you know, I respect as an investigative reporter myself. They asked me, they said, well, you know, look, we're doing this, you know, please don't disclose this. All right. You know, publicly. And I, you know, I opted for, yeah, I'm going to respect that. And they said, the other thing they said, look, if you know anybody that's going through this, please, you know, send them our way. All right. Like, if you haven't known any other reporters getting sucked into this, you know, just let them know that they can reach out to us. And
so you're out. Reach to the FBI was in 2024, and the FBI breaks open the case in June 2026. Did you have a heads up that this was coming? And by the way, that you were going to be identified, not by name, but as what person C?
Recruit C.
Recruit C in their affidavit that was publicly released.
They did. You know, it's funny. The FBI office called me up and like, I don't know, like maybe a week before they dropped the press release and they filed the affidavit, and they asked if I'd be willing to talk about it. Like, if anybody was covering this, you know, wanted to interview me. I was like, yeah, for sure. You know, I go to.
And did they tell you anything else, or you were about to pop this? It is the Chinese.
Didn't give a lot of details, but then they sent me the thing when it landed, and I was like, "God damn, it was the Chinese." Mm-hmm. You know, like you always have that like that 98% feeling that like, oh, it's one of these, and then they get it verified by like a 2-year federal investigation. Right. I mean, I guess it's not, you know, it hasn't been adjudicated. So we're at 99.9% certainty it's the Chinese. But
so they like you talking about it now because you can help raise public awareness of this scam that the Chinese run to draw people into their net and turn them into informants?
You know, it was really interesting to me, and I know I perpetually sound like a naif, even as I continue to lose my hair and get slightly grayer. But like, it's just really shocking to me the people that, like, I don't know, like, they do this, you know? Like, I use the example of, I talk about this constantly, and I didn't say anything at the time because I'd gone into the feds and they asked me not to talk about this investigation. But I mean, my God, Tim Pool and Benny Johnson getting $100,000 an episode from wherever, and you didn't investigate where the money's coming from? Like, yeah. Really?
They were getting paid by the Russians, right?
Yes, of course.
They passed the smell test, right, if they weren't aware.
You know? Yeah. And now, you know, they don't live by the same professional standards that we do.
You might say.
Yeah, I know.
Like, well, you know, there's bucks. That phrase in the affidavit, right? Wittingly or unwittingly.
Yeah.
So, and I thought that was really one of the more interesting things. It's like, we don't care whether you knew, whatever that means, or didn't know, you still should have known, right?
Yes.
And that's sort of, I think that sort of underscores what you know, this is all about. But one of the things they talk about is people with classified information or people with access to classified information, which they may or may not think reporters are a secondary, you know, way passage to get that. But my question is, how would anybody with access to classified information not be sensitized to this? How would anybody with access to classified information do this unwittingly? Is that does that make sense to you as a question? Like, I don't understand it.
I think the answer is, as you get further down into that affidavit, we find the people that went for the money, recruit I, recruit J, and what becomes readily apparent from that, and sadly, you know, is, you know, as I think Jeff said there, you know, you wouldn't do this if it didn't work, right? You know, this is, the foreign intelligence would not be doing something that didn't work. So clearly it works. Mm-hmm. People, they go for it, and they write like these like sample, you know, like reports, which they send into whoever this, you know, the perpetrator is, and they only raise it as a problem. And it's not clear to me from this whether or not they are confronted by the FBI or go to the FBI of their own accord, but they don't start cooperating with the feds until they don't get their money. And it's like, dude, like, what the hell? And then how many people are there, like, out there, you know, like,
Tom, to play devil's advocate here a bit, especially on the witting versus unwitting aspect of this, we all know folks who have worked for the CIA, ODNI, other intelligence agencies, U.S. intelligence agencies, who then go to work for foreign governments. I mean, the Saudis have had a field day hiring former CIA people who they assume have access to classified information or could give them sensitive information that they could not otherwise get. And those people are obviously doing it wittingly for the cash. So how is that different than the recruits who the Chinese were going after here?
Money. Making a lot more money, than some sap who will write a consulting paper for $1,000. Anyway, I should point out that we do this too. I wrote a story about the CIA's domestic division that keeps changing its name about a decade ago. And I included an anecdote how they placed ads in Indian newspapers for consultants on rocket programs, you know, aerodynamics and so on, knowing that the pay for these engineers in India is very low. Comparatively, of course. And so they see if they can get somebody to come for an interview, right? And if they got someone who might be willing and has access to kind of information that the CIA wants, they'll eventually hire them and tell them what they're, or pitch them and tell them what it's about.
When you said we there, you meant the CIA, not spy talk. I just want
to
clarify it for our
We don't have that kind of money. We don't have a rocket division.
What was also kind of delicious in the affidavit is that these folks were not all that subtle in some respects. And I'm looking in particular at the passages about Recruit D, who does provide a report to one of these phony Chinese companies, and then gets back a response, which is kind of hi, and then it's Recruit D, nice to have your reply. I've just reviewed your report about the Middle East. First of all, I really appreciate your efforts to the report. But as we told you before, we hope to have exclusive information rather than simple analysis. However, the report is full of your report is full of public information and well-known facts, which is very superficial and not very useful.
Who is this written to, Mike?
This was written to somebody named Recruit D on October of 2024, so a month or two after they had reached out to Tom. So my point is, and then they say, look, it's to show your sincerity and credibility, the company will still pay you $500, which will be given to you, but asking in the future, we want something. Yeah. You know, not unlike messages I've gotten from editors over some of my stories. But as far as I know, those editors weren't working for a foreign intelligence service.
Well, Tom, you've had quite an adventure. You have a great story to tell and a cautionary tale for anybody else who might need some money and is tempted to write an innocent sounding consulting report, and then they draw you in and they want to put you in a position where you collaborated to a degree that they've got something on you now. So thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you.
And
thanks.
Sharing the story with us.
Gladly. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Really interesting.
Thanks.
See you around.
And that's it for this week's Spy Talk. Be sure to check out our complete podcast archive on Apple or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you haven't already, do check out the spytalk.co news site on Substack, where we offer a steady diet of scoops and original analyses from the intersection of intelligence, foreign policy, and military operations. Just Google Spy Talk and you'll quickly find your way there. This edition of the Spy Talk podcast was smoothly produced, as always, by Kanai and expertly edited by Molly Hawkey for MSW Media. That's it. See you around. I'm Jeff Stein.
I'm Michael Isikoff.
I'm Karen Greenberg.
Thanks for listening.
For more original reporting and insights like this, subscribe to spytalk.co on Substack and follow us on Twitter at @talk_spy. If you enjoyed our podcast, subscribe and leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. MSW Media.
It's no surprise that newsmakers try to manipulate the audience. They want you to believe that they are the one holding the line, and they'll use any trick they can to get you there. But don't let them fool you. Get unspun. I'm Amanda Sturgill. I've been a reporter, and today I teach future reporters to cut the spin and think critically about what newsmakers say. My podcast, Unspun, shows you how to know when you're being manipulated by the news. Learn to spot the tricks and how to make up your own mind about what's true. So if you're tired of being fooled by the news, subscribe to Unspun today. Unspun. Because you deserve the truth.